Last week, I was suffering from some congestion that still lingers, and when I left here, Sally and Mary Beth and I went down the street to eat some chicken. Then we went to the airport. They dropped me off. I got on a plane going to New York City, and when you get on the plane with congestion, it's not a happy moment. And you go up, and that's bad. And then you come down, and that's worse. And so I'm coming down from that flight, and I'm feeling like my head is going to explode, and it's about this big. And my ears, I can't hear anything. I'm saying, I've done this, you know, flight, let's pop, pop, pop. And I'm doing every trick I know. I look up, I Google how to pop your ears, you know, everything that they say, and nothing. It's just like I'm still in this cave, and I can't, it's late. My flight was late, and Sarah was going to come get me, but she couldn't because my flight was late, and so I get a taxi, and as I get the taxi, I get in, I have a duffel bag, and I'm carrying on my left shoulder, and I'm just struggling to be, you know, just articulate. Where am I going? Oh, yeah. I tell him. He says, is this it? Yeah, okay. We go. I have a duffel bag and my backpack, and they're both on my left shoulder. I'm sitting next to the right seat, and we get to the place, and there's a little confusion over how much I owe, and so, but we worked that out, and I get out of the taxi. I go into Brad and Sarah's house. She's in the back on a phone call with the baby, Hallie. And Brad's there, and I put my stuff down, and I'm hungry. I say, Brad, yeah, I'm really hungry. Is there anything to eat? And so he says, no, we really don't have. I said, well, that's okay. In my backpack, there's some peanuts. I'll get that. And I look down, and there's my duffel bag, and there is no backpack. I'm like, what? What's the deal here? So just like that, you know. I'm looking for my backpack. He said, I don't see a backpack. So I go outside and I'm looking, what did I do with my backpack? And I must have left my backpack in the cab. And so I'm sort of going, and I'm panicked already, you know, I'm not too good. And even at my best, I'm just barely, you know, I leave stuff everywhere, always. And so then it's like, I had my stuff in that backpack slid off onto the seat, and I had just my duffel, and I must have left it there. So I almost never get a receipt for anything. I know, that's dumb, but it's me. And so but this time I did. I got a receipt. I said, let's look and see. Well, right at the top, there's a medallion number. And it tells you, that's how they know what cab it is and the name of the cab driver. And right at that spot is right where he had torn it. And it was torn. And it also was like his printer was going out of ink kind of thing, you know. So Brad got out a magnifying glass and he's looking. And he can just see the bottom letters and he can't find it. But he's writing it down, so we enter what we can, because you're supposed to email if you lose something or you have a complaint, you email it. So we did, and that's all we could do. That's all we could do. And so the next morning, I had an email, and it said, you need to contact Benzel McClellan, who is right now one of my best friends. And so Benzel, I called and we talked and he said, okay, tell me your information about the cab. And I told him, and we had zero. We didn't know. I said, I'm not sure. Well, how did you pay? I said, I paid with a credit card. What's the last four digits? He said, oh, I can find him. And so he did. He found my taxi driver. He said, I found out who it was. Great. He said, I'll call him. So that was Monday. And then Tuesday, nothing. So I called Benzel. Benzel, he said, I left him a message. He didn't get back to me. So I'm thinking, dude, what's going on? And so I call him again in the morning, Tuesday morning. He didn't get back to me. He hasn't gotten back to me. So then I call because, you know, I'm anxious about this. Here's what's in my backpack. My computer's in my backpack. I have an iPad in my backpack. I have my Bible that I preach with in my backpack. I have another book in my backpack. I have some notebooks that I take notes in for us in my backpack. I have a retreat I went on last year. The notes in that are nowhere else was in my backpack. And I had, I thought I had about $120 of cash in my backpack. It turned out to be more than that. And some other items. But that's a lot for me. I thought, I'm going to die. You know, so I didn't know what to do. So I kept calling Benzel. And now I started just getting his answering machine. And that's what I got over and over and over and over. And I called the other number and they said, well, we'll transfer you to Benzel. Okay, nothing. And finally, Thursday, you know, everybody, I've told everybody and they know we're done, dude. You're done. You're toast. And so no Benzel. And then a woman who speaks with authority. I love a woman who speaks with authority. And if I didn't, I do now. She said, Mr. Strader, I have on the line your taxi driver, Mr. Khan. I said, oh my gosh. And so he said, hello. He says, hello, in a very thick accent. And he says, where can I take I have your backpack. Where can I bring it? I'm like, oh my, I'm in heaven. You know what's going on? And so sure enough, it turns out I'm at one location having a meeting, and he's going to bring it to Sarah's house, and I'm going to meet him there walking, and me and this other person, we're walking, and we see him out on the street in front of Sarah's house, and we see the cab, and we're walking, yeah, right, and I'm excited, and he goes like, he sees me, and he recognizes, oh, this is probably the guy, and he goes, that's what the cab driver does, right? And he says, here's your backpack. I said, what happened? He said, well, and this is, he was new, and he doesn't speak English very well. And he said, I wasn't sure what to do. And sure, protocol is there's a place they drop it. And I tried that place, and nothing had been dropped off. So I'm sure he was getting a little bit of an education on the job from his supervisor, the authoritative woman who I spoke to. I'm sure that some corrections going on there. He said, and he tried to explain to me how sometimes bags on the ground he sees, but he didn't see this until the next day. And I didn't, you know, I was just like, hug. We hugged. I said, how much do I owe you? He said, you don't owe me anything. So I gave him a reward, of course, but you know, yeah. And everything was there. And my money had almost doubled since it was been there. I mean, you know, some Wall Street, forget about it. Just lose your backpack and keep some cash in there, and maybe it will grow. Well, all that to say, most of the stuff I have to prepare, you know, actually, I do prepare sermons, and I have kind of a rhythm I'm on. And Tuesday is sermon day. And Tuesday, I spent mostly with the Beekman staff and calling Benzel's answering machine. That's what I've spent most of the day. And then Wednesday, I put it into a PowerPoint and try to send it to Mike and Jeanette by Wednesday night, sometimes Thursday, sometimes later. They're super generous. And so Friday, Mike texts me and says, is there a PowerPoint coming? And I said, no PowerPoint, but a story. And so that's the story of the backpack. And so the sermon, instead of my computer, I bought a little subject notebook like this, and there's no slides. I'm just going to sort of tell you some stuff about Jesus. But what I want to say about this is sometimes, you know, how's the song go that we sang? It is well with my soul. Both ways. Sometimes it's a storm. Sometimes it's calm. It's good. And there's so much more, though. So let's dig into the Word of God. There's something that, because my backpack was lost, I jumped into the Bible. I didn't have my Bible, but I found out that other Bibles say kind of pretty much the same thing as mine. I found that out. And so we're going to read from John 9. And it's going to be kind of old school, go through the scriptures kind of sermon. Only I'm going to be telling the story. You can read to check and see if I'm telling the truth. Last week we talked about John 1 and the Word became flesh. And how that Word becoming flesh was an invitation, a declaration that the family of God is messy. Remember, the title of the sermon was My Messy Family. And we all have that. We're all in that. And so was Jesus, was a mess. His family was messier than mine, it turns out. And the characters in his family line were, they were moral wrecks. They were bad leaders. Even the best of them, David, was a murderer. So, I mean, you know, whoa, I don't have any murderers in my family that I know of. And so it's like, and he's saying, that's okay. So whoever you are, I've got room for you in my family. I'm choosing you. These are the things I want us to get from this. I chose you, Jesus says. I chose you. And as he chose us, okay, now what? Here's what I want you to think about yourself as we get into today's sermon. It's going to be from John 9. And think of this. It's the NBA draft. Y'all know what the NBA draft is, okay? Or the NFL draft, either one. And we're just going to say that Art Carlson is the newest version of Steph Curry in college, and he is he's the best basketball player in college forever, and he's the number one draft pick. He's chosen. And so on draft day, he's chosen. And then what, though? Because the story's not over just because you're chosen. So Jesus comes, he becomes flesh in that particular family to let you know that on draft day, you're chosen. You don't have to try out for the team. You're invited to be on the team. You're chosen. But now what? Okay, now what? So we're going to I'm going to tell this story in John 9. And in John 9, a couple things going on. You might imagine that John 8 comes before that, because that's the way the Bible goes, you know. Then John 7 came before that. So, and you know, you get it. But you realize, because we've talked about this before, that those verses and chapters, they didn't come around for probably a couple hundred years after the Bible was written. So sometimes those verses and chapters connect or can throw you off a little bit. I'll come back to that in a minute. But he was making some radical statements about who he was. And then it says, as he went along, he saw a blind man. He saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So right off the bat, this is how it starts. They're asking a really, really bad question. And you know, sometimes you can ask a question that's, you don't think it's a bad question, but it is a bad question. Here's the way it goes with me, and I'm living with my dad. He's 89, okay, and I'm 66, and that's a weird situation where I'm living in the home of my parents at this age. But no, just I want you to think back to the time when you were living in your parents' home, and this question is still awkward, and it's not a good question. So he asked the question, where have you been? I say, dude, in my mind, I'm saying, none of your business, you know? But dad, he's just curious, right? But sometimes you ask that question, where have you been? And you have mean something else. Like, you've been, I jump right, I'm 66, and I jump right into teenager defense mode. It doesn't matter. That's me. So they're asking this question, but always it's like, here's the issue with human beings. It's very common practice. What we want to do when something bad happens, we want to put the blame somewhere. And we want to do it pretty quickly. So that something bad's happened to this man, we need to blame somebody. You know, we want to blame somebody, and I do this all the time. Usually, like right now, I'm trying to blame about my backpack. Well, if Sarah hadn't have, if she would have come to get me, you know, like she told me she was going to, then my backpack would have been in the place where my coat is right now. My coat right now is in Sarah's car. Because, of course, I left it there accidentally, you know. Not my fault, though, right? Well, and she's saying, well, it wasn't my fault I didn't come get you. Your plane was delayed. And I want to say, exactly, American Airlines, why are you doing this all the time? You know, we always want to, somebody's got to be to blame for this. And honestly, the problem almost sinks away. We can almost discount the problem, whatever it is. We don't worry about fixing the problem. Let's just get somebody to blame. So who is to blame? You know, is it Congress's fault or is it, you know, the president's fault? Well, let's just blame somebody. We got to blame somebody. That's what they were doing. And this is a problem. And here's what happens. Jesus says, neither one. This happens like so many other things. So many other things happen so that, Bob, you can learn a lesson. You can learn some lessons. This happens for the glory of God. You're going to see this is going to happen for the glory of God. And so then Jesus heals the dude. And it's one of the most weird healing stories. And we're not going to go into all the depths of all the things we could do in this story. He heals him by spitting in the dirt and rubbing the mud on the guy's eyes. Like, why that? And I think there are some reasons that I could go into more, but we're not going to. Just know that that's something else you could look into here. But it's kind of weird. If you've got the ability to heal me, can't you just say so? But he spits in the mud, puts the mud in his eyes, and goes on. When that happens, and he is healed. And then here's the thing that's weird. He begins to go around and tell everybody, hey, I was blind, but now I can see. And the people who, you know, what they ought to be is like excited, awesome. They said, no, you are not. You were never blind. You must have been faking it. Or maybe you weren't that guy. And he said, yeah, this is me. I promise you, I was blind. But now, that was me all along. Are you sure? So especially who does this are the Pharisees. And if you want to see this, look in your Bible, verse 13. Okay, so he's looking at this, and because they think Jesus is a bad guy because of these teachings that had happened earlier in John 8 and John 7 and John 6. Things are going on back there. So they're already anti-Jesus. And so if Jesus healed him, we know Jesus is not, he's a bad guy. You're saying a bad guy healed you? And the dude says, look, I don't know. I just know one thing. I was blind. Now I can see. That's what I know. I don't know what he said before. I don't know where he came from. I don't know these things. I just know he healed me, right? That's all I know. I'm not sure where that backpack was, but he gave it back to me. Okay, so here we go. And we're in the store, and we find out the parents are involved this too. And the parents are afraid of these Pharisee bullies. And they're afraid of the Pharisee bullies because they're like they might get kicked out of church. Like, so they want to impress them so they don't get kicked out of church. So they know their son was blind, but here they are, verse 20. We know he's our son, and we know he was born blind, but how he can see now, who opened his eyes is verse 20, 21. Ask him. Yeah, let him tell you, because we don't want to get into it, right? We don't want to get into that, because that's a mess. Here's the deal. I'm going to call it this. And this was happening all through this verse. And so I want to sit down on this. And if I had a PowerPoint, this would be a slide. If I had a handout, you'd be writing notes right now, okay? So the notes would be that there's a trap in life called religion. There's a trap called religion. Sally, hand me that, this deal here. Yeah, yeah. We have this. Y'all have this. We have these, the bulletin. Good thing. There are several things wrong with the trap of religion. I'll get to the bulletin in just a minute. But a couple things about religion. What happens in our country, and, you know, we've mentioned this even today, Religion is in the prayer that maybe all of you didn't hear this, the prayer that Jeanette prayed with the worship team. These words, we want people to receive Jesus but more. Why not? Well, part of it's this idea that Jesus is irrelevant. And where does that come from? Well, because really our culture looks at religion, and a lot of what religion does seems irrelevant. Like, what has that got to do with real life in me? You guys go to this thing on Sundays and you sing some songs and then you do some stuff with some juice and then you go, what's the purpose of that? You know, they don't see anything really happening. And another thing about religion is to the outsiders, religious people seem pretty hypocritical. They say one thing, but they do another thing. This is our bad reputation out in the world. And all of us kind of need to nod with me on that, right? Isn't that right? And then a lot of times religious people come off, and I'm talking about religious people. I'm not talking necessarily followers of Jesus, but religious people, they kind of like come off arrogant. Kind of like, I got this, you don't. I'm better than you. And I'm better than you, you know why? Because my religion. Because I've got this. You don't. I'm right. You're not right. This is religion. It's the spirit of religion. It's not what we embrace here. And it's about this. It's about judgment. We're judgmental. We think you're wrong. And sometimes even I'm listening to this our awesome video in class today. But the thing that the people at the end who are making comments, if you were in class, they were talking about what it is to go into the world and make a difference in the world for the kingdom of God. And it all was about this word confrontation. Like, that's what Christians are sent out to do. Confront, 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 confront. Is that what we're about? That's religion. The spirit of religion. We're going to confront. And then it's this idea that religion is doing the right things, and we're going to do them in the right way. I love Jeremy's when he was praying for the Coptic church, and he's like, I don't know what we'd see if we went over there, right? Because it may be different. And, you know we got our way, and our way's the right way, and we do the right things in the right way. And so we say this on our, this what we say on the back. This is who we are. It's not about guilt. It's about forgiveness. It's not about judgment. It's about compassion. It's not about rules. It's about freedom. It's not about religion. It's about life. This is who we say we are. But I think maybe we need to take a look in the mirror. Sometimes are there some rules that we've kind of hanging on to? Like, you know, dude, you got some rules. We got to have some rules. I mean, come on. Aren't there some rules we got to have? Like for instance, everybody knows you're supposed to have class before you have the worship service, so you got to do that. So we're good. Check that box. Hey, man. Just a thought. The thing about religion, and that's what these Pharisees were doing with Jesus, he wasn't doing what they call the right things, and he certainly wasn't doing them in the right way. Religion wants people, like they wanted this blind man to conform, and they don't tolerate behaviors, and they don't tolerate practices that don't line up with their traditional ways of this is the way we've always done things. That's why we're sitting in rows today. We have to have rows. Well, maybe not. For some things, it's okay to be. We know some things are wrong, but it's okay. We can't help being greedy. Everybody's greedy. We're trying not to be, but we are. But, you know, so it's okay kind of. So, but it's not okay to be gay. Can't come here if you're gay. Here's what people do. When you feel judged, what you do is you put up a barrier to protect yourself from the judgment of others. And when you put that barrier up, what you do then, that barrier also becomes a wall that keeps you from receiving some of the affirmation you really need. And so what people do who feel judged, they just don't come. They don't come to church. Why? Because there's a spirit of judgment in churches, in religion. And I don't want to be a part of that. And so that what they don't come. Vulnerability, participation, those things are difficult for a person who feels judged. You feel vulnerable. Can I really say what I think? Well, sometimes I do, and it's not the right thing. I didn't say it right. And I feel this sense of judgment. And so what do we do about that? How do we deal with that? Well, I'm going to go back to the story in John 9. Because the story is kind of about the Pharisees, but really it's about the man. So here's what they did. This is what was crazy to me. You know, at one point, they say to him that he should tell the truth. They say, tell the truth and give God the glory. But the only thing they would accept as truth was, I wasn't born blind. What they want him to do is lie. They want him to lie and call that the truth to give glory to God. Because the only version of the truth we're going to accept is the acceptable version that we together have deemed. Now then, so what we're in a dilemma. So what's next? What's the next step? Because this is not where the story ends at all. So finally, though, when they get down to the end of their dealing with the man, they judge him. And this is not much different than what the disciples said in verse 2 was what they say in verse 34. We're not going to listen to you anymore. He said, you were steeped in sin at birth. We're not going to listen to you anymore. So Jesus heard that they'd thrown him out. This is verse 35. And when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he said, who is he, sir? Tell me so that I can believe. He said, you have now seen him, in fact, and he's the one speaking to you. And the man said, yes, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And then Jesus says, for judgment I've come into this world so that the blind may see, and those who will see will become blind. And this is, Jesus starts talking this back and forth gibberish. I don't understand this, and neither do the Pharisees. So they say, the Pharisees say, what? Are you saying that we're blind? Because he was. And Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. What he's most against in this scenario here is this scene is people who think they've got it all together. If you think you're perfect, if you think you've got all the answers, if you think your way is the only way, if you think the way of the past is only still the same way that is now, and we can't have any tolerance for any kind of change, we don't have any tolerance for any kind of disagreement, then yeah, you're blind. Now, once again, the key here comes down to this. Do you believe? Now, last week we talked about John 1. I want to go right real quick back to John 1. Right in the middle of Jesus coming, and he's the light of the world, and he's the Word become flesh. But in verse 12, he says, verse 11, he came to those that were his own, and his own didn't receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. That's what he's giving this blind man right now. He says, do you believe? Will you believe in me? What does that mean to believe? Well, like I said, when John first wrote this, the chapters weren't there and the verses weren't there. So if that 10 wasn't there, you know, if it just said 9 plus, it kept going. Jesus is going to tell a story about sheep and goats to the Pharisees. I mean, excuse me, about sheep and people who come to steal sheep. The sheep herder, he's going to talk about the shepherd and the sheep. He's going to talk about the gate. He's going to talk about the good shepherd. And ultimately, why I believe it fits with chapter 9 is verse 21. They said, Well, verse 19, the Jews who heard these words were divided. He's demon-possessed. He's raving mad. Why listen to him? These are the sayings of someone possessed by a demon, but can a demon open the eyes of the blind? They're going back to that blind man whose eyes were just opened. But the point here is they're sheep, and they hear the voice of the shepherd, and this is what he's asking this blind man to do. Do you believe me? Do you believe I am who I say I am? Because if you believe me, what you're going to do is you're going to follow me. You're going to follow me. Now, this is where I could do a sort of a bait and switch kind of thing and say, and believing Jesus means doing all the following all the rules like I set them up. But believing in Jesus means following him like a sheep follows the shepherd. It means putting all my trust and all my hope in him, so much so that I'm going to follow him. I am going to give up some of the things I do because they're the wrong things. They're not rules, but they're ways of living. Okay? And there's a subtle but real difference. I'm going to follow Jesus. And it means maybe my lifestyle will have to change, and some of the things I really want to do and I feel like I ought to do, I need to change, because that's not what God, Jesus, the Son of God, is telling me I need to do. I need to be ready to let go of everything and trust and believe in God. So there's a man named Angel Perez. He works at the house on Beekman. He was their Bible teacher, but he's changed jobs. And he just recently stopped working at the house on Beekman, and he's working at a correctional facility for teenagers where young men have gone who've broken the law. And he's working with them. He's being trained really right now to work with them. He's very talented. He is very well educated, even though his education mostly came from his own research. He's very well educated. And he's sitting with me, and we're discussing life. And we talk about everything that's going on in our lives. His background is rough, but Jesus found him, pulled him out of where he was, and he's given himself to Jesus in every kind of way. And we're talking about the good, the bad, the ugly. We're talking about he likes the Mets for some reason. And, you know, I know that's evil. I'm trying to work him through that. We're talking about everything about life. We're talking about his romantic life, which is a mess. My romantic life, which is, you know, moving on. And we're talking about his family, talking about my family. We're talking about the trouble we've had. We're talking about the injustice we see in the world. We're talking about our own personal failures. We're all talking about the pain that we have experienced because of injustice. We're talking about the pain we've experienced because of our own mistakes and our own rebellion. We're very confessional right here. And we're both really have got everything laid out on the table of life. And he says to me, Bob, I'm not sure how you do it. Because he knows I'm in a season of hope, but I'm also in a very season of pain. And when your 40-year-old son is off the rails, you know, and a lot of us have been there together holding hands. You know this is hard. You experience it. Maybe it's your 14-year-old son instead of your 4-year, but nevertheless, my grandson's 14. And I'm just like, oh. He says, how do you do it? I said, how do I do what? How do you stay positive? How do you have hope? And I said, well, three things. I believe that God created me. I believe that he loves me. And I believe that he's going to take me home. So some of these things might not work out today. I may not figure all this out, what it is to follow Jesus. But I believe he loves me, and he's patient with me if I kind of wander off the track. Okay, if I kind of wander away, he's patient. As a matter of fact, his version of the good shepherd, he's the one who leaves the 99 and comes after and chases me down. That's how I believe in. He loves me that much. And at the end of the day, which is the end of life, He's going to take me home. He's going to take me home. This is how I have hope. Because my hope is I believe in him. And so today what I'm going to do is I'm going to read his word. Not like a list of rules. Not like an instruction book you're changing the oil in your car. But it's like, no, it's about how to love other people. And a lot of times how loving other people means giving up my own way. It means doing something that's not for me. And I'm going to try, because that's the way I read Jesus. And sometimes there's things I don't like about some of the ways I want to do things. And I have to say, okay, but that's not the way Jesus said, let that go. And I let that go and I move forward in love. And there are some barriers that Jesus says, don't do this, and don't do this, and don't do that. And they sound like rules, and they kind of are, but they're more what I think is just ways of living life. I'm not going to lie. And yet I sometimes do lie. I don't know if any of y'all ever lied before. All those who didn't never have lied, raise your hand, you liar. But we do. But I'm not going to make light of that either, because those are serious things. I've hurt people. What is Jesus going to do? I believe you, Jesus. I believe you love me. I believe that in the end, you're going to make all these things right. So write down, what am I going to do today? I'm going to follow Jesus as close as I can. I believe that's what this blind man had the opportunity to do. The Pharisees were going to sit back and over in the, and they're going to say, well, he's not doing it our way. Can't put up with that. Can't come into our church. The disciples, confused as they were, still stumbling along, they're saying some of the same things that the Pharisees are saying. But Jesus says, come on, guys. You follow me. You're part of my sheep. And then Jesus in that sheep part says, you know, there's going to be some other sheep that they're going to be part of this group too. You might not think there are. Might be those Coptic guys over there. They might be in there too. Just come on, follow me. Follow me. We're going to sing called I Will Follow. And, you know, to me, as I've gone through just the songs of today, and the story of the blind man, and the story of Jesus' disciples, and him saying, I died for you, I became flesh for you, I'm asking you, I'm drafting you on my team, come follow me. As you all know, I was joking about Art. He's not got the skills of Steph Curry at all. He would never be drafted by an NBA team. And this is where Jesus is different. He doesn't draft you because of your skills. He doesn't draft you because of your skills. He doesn't choose you because of the way you behave. He chooses you because he loves you, and he says, follow me, because he wants you to be the best you can be. That's why I want you to follow him, okay? So let's stand up and sing it as if we mean it, okay?